We are joined right now by a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1. He is a writer for The Athletic. He is a New York Times best-selling author. I could talk to him about any number of things. Bruce Feldman joins me. Bruce, Happy New Year. Good to have you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to be on with you, Jim.
It's good to have you, Bruce. So, I could talk to you about any number of things, but you've got this fascinating piece up right now on The Athletic about the Alabama coaching staff. And there's a reoccurring question in that piece, Bruce, and the question is, where's Dan? For those who do not know, who is Dan and who was looking for Dan when the question was being asked?
Dan is Dan Enos. And up till about a week ago, he was the expected offensive coordinator who was going to take over the Alabama offense for Mike Locksley, who had become the head coach at Maryland. Everybody in the program really liked Dan Enos. And then on Thursday night, I started hearing rumblings that Dan Enos was drawing some interest from Miami to be the Hurricanes offensive coordinator. And I remember thinking, well, he's not going to do that, because if he stays at Alabama, he's got Tua Tagovailoa, who's the Heisman runner-up and a real special talent at quarterback, and all these great receivers who are sophomores and really, you know, 2 5-star running backs. I mean, this thing is poised to be another really explosive offense. He's there one more year, and he probably have his own Power 5 head coaching opportunities. And then the next morning, he bolts. And not only that, when there's a morning staff meeting, Nick Saban is like, hey, where's Dan? Where's Dan? Where the bleep is Dan? Eventually it got to. So they were supposed to interview offensive line candidates for that coaching vacancy on the staff. There was already a bunch of other staff turnover that was going on, and that move blindsided Nick Saban. And, you know, as one of the guys on staff had put it to me, it was like the Colts, meaning kind of disappeared in the middle of the night. And I think that did not set well with a program, honestly, that has had quite a bit of turnover and probably will have a little more on the coaching staff before things are all said and done this winter.
You mean Nick had a problem with that? Why? And Bruce Feldman joining us. This is an amazing story. All right, so a number of the people, Bruce, on that staff knew where Dan was, but nobody wanted to tell Saban. So one of them goes into Dan's office. What did they find in his office? And at that point, where was Dan?
Nothing but a pencil. And then they went to check, well, let me see if he's moved into the new Mike Locksley office to replace his old offensive coordinator. And that was empty too. So, you know, he was on his way to take over at Miami. And he was announced as the new Miami offensive coordinator that same morning. So it was quite the curveball. And the people who needed to know, who had been in communication with him late Thursday night, did not hear anything about that he was leaving for Miami. So that, you know, what's interesting, Jim, is Nick Saban loses coaches at a rate that no other, you know, successful superpower program has. You know, when Pete Carroll lost guys at USC, the thing started to backslide. When Urban Meyer lost Dan Mullen and Charlie Strong at Florida, that thing crumbled. When Bobby Bowden lost his top guys, that thing went off. Nick Saban, they come and go, and he replaces them seamlessly. And the way they usually go is falls into three categories. The first is the guys get promoted up into head coaching jobs, whether it's Kirby Smart or Mike Locksley or Jim McElwain, Lane Kiffin. That happens. Then there's another layer, which is fairly unique to Alabama, which the guys kind of get forced out or pushed or nudged out. Maybe they're not quite the right fit. Maybe they're good coaches, but, you know, he wants to go in a different direction. He's connected enough to help them land and get a soft landing someplace else. This third category where Dan Enos fits in, and maybe there's a few more that fit in there. There's kind of it's a little bit vague between who fits in the second category and who fits in the third category, are the guys who go, man, this is such a grind working in this situation. I'm not sure this is best for me and how long I can take it or want to deal with it. And so the story that I did on The Athletic yesterday really gets into, from talking to former coaches who worked there, what that dynamic is like, how demanding it is, and also why it works and why Nick Saban is still able to keep winning in spite of a staggering amount of turnover on his staff.
Bruce Feldman joining us. Well said, Bruce. There's a lot to unpack there, but let me ask you this. You used the phrase ass chewings. which is something that fans are very familiar with from watching Saban lash out at assistants during the games. Is it just an in-game thing, or is that something that happens when the cameras are not rolling?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that was what I asked a couple of the guys who used to work there. And one of them specifically said, you can live with that. That's a couple of times a year. It's in the emotion of the game. It's the stuff that is the day-to-day that wears them out, or wears some of them out. And what this person meant was, if you're there for a little while, you realize it's almost like it's scheduled that on the third day of training camp, he's going to go off. Or on September 7th, he's going to go off. And this person said, it's like it's in his notes. I need to do this because that he feels like is effective to manage the staff and manage the program. And so maybe it's his way to combat complacency. And the thing is with Nick Saban, and guys agree with this, who've been there, and even though it may wear on them and gut them to some degree, is they look at it and go, you know what? The guy's won 5 national titles at Alabama. He is the best college football coach of all time, doing it at a level where all these complexities are out there. And so there is a quote-unquote method to the madness, but it is tough and it is demanding and it is clearly not for everybody to work for. And they feel like sometimes you talk to guys, and one of the guys told me, you feel like you're going to have a short shelf life when you go there. You may not be there for very long, but you try to get the best out of it and develop, and hopefully you'll win some championships and make a bunch of money in the process.
Bruce Feldman joining us. So let me ask you this. If the guys who are there think that maybe it's like scheduled almost to a certain extent, I mean, when you take a step back, Bruce, it kind of feels that way, right? I feel like there's a scheduled rant about the fans leaving games early, or there's a scheduled rant about something media related at the same time every single year. If that's the case, does that mean that it's all an act and it's not authentic?
That's a great question, and I don't know. I think that's partly true. He knows what he is doing and how he is, I don't want to say, puppeteering the coaching staff and everybody around him. I mean, and this goes into the story a little bit about there are guys on his staff, Scott Cochran, the strength coach, Jeff Allen, the director of sports medicine, who are the guys who are part of his process. And it's almost like they are good cop. Saban becomes the bad cop. And in truth, the assistant coaches deal with Saban more than they deal with those guys. And the players deal with more the support guys, strength coach, sports medicine guys, than they probably deal with Saban across the board. And so it is this balance that he has figured out. And again, I think there are certain things that he reacts to. I mean, I don't think he looks in a game and just says, okay, this is going to blow up and I'm going to react this way. I do think there's a lot of volatility that's genuine. But I think when it comes to how he is controlling things and how he is trying to keep an edge and keep the program from being complacent, and that is something other coaches outside the program are always fascinated by. How is he able to do it? And I think there is a very calculated way that goes into it, as explained in the story.
Bruce Feldman joining us. It's a fascinating story. Bruce, I had Freddie Kitchens on, and we were talking about, people keep saying how authentic he is. I thought it was great because his reaction was something along the lines of, I don't know what the big deal is. Isn't this the way you're supposed to be? Which to me was great because what's more authentic than somebody saying, what's so great about being authentic? But then at the same time, you have a former assistant telling you that Saban, quote, lacks a real personal relationship with the people he works with. It just feels like a business relationship, end of quote. What was your reaction when you heard that?
I'm not shocked. I mean, one of the things that I heard from a different former Alabama coach was you have a better relationship after you leave than you do when you're there. And I just think there is so much focus for him in the moment and on what's going to get us ready for the next thing, that a lot of those other things and those nuanced things, I don't want to say they're not on his radar, but I think he has figured out what works for him. And I think he's made a lot of decisions and he's wired differently than a lot of these guys. Like what Freddie Kitchens told you and what a lot of other coaches, feel, I think those things are genuine. And I think it sounds great to be that way. But for Nick Saban, the way he's wired, it's worked out incredibly well. And I think, whether he's made these decisions and said, all right, I would like to be the other way, but I know that this is the best for my career and how I want to do this. I mean, that's just, you know, I hate to say it, like, as cold and as blunt as this, but, like, you know, you can't, it's hard to find fault. I mean, you can say I don't like it. You can say there's things that are maybe you find distasteful and maybe not hit the right notes. But the guy's the greatest coach that we've seen in college football. I mean, it's right now, it's not even close. And this is the way he does it. And it's not to say the other ways are wrong. I mean, it's refreshing to hear some of that stuff, but this is the best way for him, and he's not going to change it. And I don't think anybody who is an Alabama person wants him to change, because if he does, you're probably not getting the same success he's had.
You're right. The process works for him. All right, so to your key point, Bruce, what about this notion of turnover? It's hurt so many other programs. Up until now, it has not hurt him, but has something changed, and in your opinion, has all of that turnover finally caught up to Nick and his program?
I don't think it has. Now, look, the two things that are most different is this is more change than he's ever had. This past offseason, 6 new assistant coaches came in. In my reporting, I think it may be as many as 7 new assistants may end up there this year.
Wow.
So that's 13 in a basically a full calendar year. And on top of that, they're coming off the worst beatdown they've ever had since he's been the head coach there. But having said all that, this team is loaded with talent in 2019. That offense should be really, really explosive. And I think that, you know, he's still got a really good bunch of talent in the pipeline defensively. I mean, he's still recruiting at an incredibly high level. And he's there. And the Scott Cochran-Jeff Allen combination is there. There's a lot of pieces that are in place. It doesn't mean that the assistant coaches don't matter, because they do. But I think as long as Saban's there, and as long as his inner circle is there, and as long as he's recruiting 5-star after 5-star, I don't think they're falling off. I mean, Clemson's going to make a run at them because of what Dabo's doing there. I mean, it's going to be 1 and 1A, but I think everybody else, I don't see anybody in the SEC that's ready to overtake Nick Saban. There are good teams there. They're recruiting well, but I just don't see it right now. I mean, we may be seeing a lot more of Clemson, Alabama, and I don't think it's going to be as much of a blowout next time.
And then, Bruce, finally, you mentioned the beatdown. What is your sense as to how Saban has taken this and how he's responding to a 28-point loss to Clemson? What do you think that he thinks about that loss?
I think it's head-scratching, but I think, you know, one of the things that was lost in all this and people talking about how great they were in the run-up to this was they had 3 returning starters on defense going into the year, and they lost their top 6 defensive backs. They were more vulnerable than I think we in the media who cover the sport probably realized, and Oklahoma wasn't able to take as much advantage of it as they could have. Oklahoma's defense was so bad that I think Alabama could have done what it wanted to on offense and controlled that game. But when they went up against somebody who is just as talented, and it was Clemson's night, but I think for Nick Saban, I think, you know, we've seen Urban Meyer's teams get blown out. You know, we saw it with Purdue. We certainly saw it with Clemson. We've seen it happen. We hadn't seen this from Nick Saban. So I think he's figuring out, okay, where were the parts where we were not ready? Where were the decisions in game where we were not ready? And all those things, I think he's factored in. I mean, the talent's there. It's just that they just were not as prepared as Clemson was. And I think that's the stuff that, you know, look, he's adding Steve Sarkisian to be his offensive coordinator. It's a guy he knows and has worked with. I think there's a lot of stuff that he's going to look at on the defensive side of the ball as he's going to rebuild that and say, okay, here are the adjustments we need to make, not just in game, but to get ready for these games, because, you know, maybe there was a level of complacency because they're in uncharted waters now. And I think that's stuff that he's going to be stewing on for a while.
It's a fascinating read. It's up on The Athletic right now. Bruce Feldman also is a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1 and a New York Times bestselling author as well. Extremely well done, Bruce. Great to have you back. Thanks for the conversation. Great read.
Thanks, Jim. Always good to be on with you.
You too, Bruce. Thank you very much. Bruce Feldman talking about Alabama and the staff. That is an amazing story. Nick's looking around for his new offensive coordinator, and dude's gone. He just bounced. Bounced and didn't tell him. Left for not another head coaching job, but another coordinator job.